This is the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 16th of September 2016. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending September the 16th, 2016, which this week has been edited by Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Downing. If you have any problems with your memory stick or the playback box, please contact Lynn Parker on 01962 862 826. That's 01962 862 826, and she'll try to sort it out. But before you do call, make sure that the box is properly plugged into the mains and is charging up. Your readers today are Shirley Parnell.
Hello.
Heather Thorpe-Tracy.
Hello.
And Jane Harding.
Hello.
And I am Noel Thorpe-Tracy. The main headlines this week are winners and losers in boundary changes, new designs being sought by council, and Gottlieb sacked or suspended. So, may we have the story behind the first headline, please, Shirley?
Yes. Winners and losers in boundary changes. The Mean Valley parliamentary seat will vanish under a shake-up announced for the next election. The seat held by Conservative George Hollingberry will be swallowed up by surrounding constituencies, even though it was only formed in 2010. The proposals for changes in parliamentary constituencies are part of reforms which would see the House of Commons reduced from 650 MPs to 600. A public consultation has started, with the final decisions made in 2018. Mr. Hollingberry, MP for 6 years, said, "These changes to constituency boundaries mean everyone's vote should carry the same weight in future parliamentary elections. This is clearly in the best interests of democracy, so I welcome it wholeheartedly. Of course, I'm deeply disappointed my constituency will cease to exist, because I very much love representing Meon Valley, a place full of great people, places, businesses and natural beauty tucked into the heart of Hampshire. But until the change, I promise I will continue to do the best I can to represent residents and to help them with their problems and issues." Winchester MP Steve Bryan could also see major changes, losing Chandler's Ford, and villages just south of Winchester, such as Compton, Twyford and Hursley. However, he has gained large parts of Meon Valley. Mr. Bryan said, "Reducing the cost of politics and ensuring everyone's vote counts the same as absolutely..." Sorry, say that again. "Counts the same is absolutely the right thing to do. It was a key manifesto committed for us." Under the proposals, Southampton will still be made up of Southampton Itchen and a slightly larger Southampton Test, which will now include Bassett and Swathling and Southampton Itchen, while MP for Romsey and Southampton North, Caroline Noakes, will have a larger constituency, which will swallow up a huge chunk of the Test Valley and will stretch as far north as Clanville. Conservative New Forest East MP Julian Lewis's constituency will also be larger and will include places like West Titherley, north of Romsey. Conservative MP for Fareham, Suella Fernandez, will have a bigger patch to include Whiteley that was previously part of George Hollingberry's Meon Valley constituency. Meanwhile, the Isle of Wight will have two MPs, one for the east and the other for the west of the island. The planned reduction is expected to hit Labour hardest, with more constituencies abolished or merged in strongholds such as London, Wales, the North East and North West than the Tory-dominated Shires.
New designs being sought by council. Civic chiefs relaunched the initiative to rejuvenate station approach. New designs for the station approach scheme in Winchester are being pursued. Winchester City Council's Cabinet says that it's committed to a development at station approach, despite the rejection in July of architects who won a design competition. The council is seeking new ideas for offices, shops, homes, parking and public spaces at the Carfax site near Winchester Station. It decided at Cabinet last Wednesday against developing further the ideas of Hopkins, also known as Bidder B. Its plans were rejected by councillors who said its scheme was too big. Leader of the Liberal Democrat group, Lucille Thompson, said she was relieved that council is not rebooting Hopkins' plans. Councillor Thompson said, "We thought the council vote was clear and were horrified when the Tories tried to reintroduce the scheme with minimal changes. There was a lot of lobbying behind the scenes to persuade councillors to change their minds, but the Liberal Democrats made it clear they wanted a fresh start to take into account the views of local people and local businesses." Councillor Martin Todd said, "Hopefully this will go some way to restoring people's faith in the democratic process. It is important that the council must listen to the views of local residents." And City Council leader Stephen Godfrey said, "This decision demonstrates the importance of station approach. The architectural competition did not produce consensus over the leading design, and members were not convinced that it could be adapted sufficiently within procurement rules. However, members felt that whilst the winning bidder could change its current design to meet the issues identified under the current procurement process, it might not be legally possible to make those changes. Accordingly, Cabinet does not rule out the possibility of Bidder B or any of the other tenderers being invited to tender again under the new procurement." Councillor Godfrey added, "The council has listened to people's views and shown flexibility in its approach. I hope that those who are passionate about what is right for Winchester will also show willingness to compromise as we move forward so that we can deliver this much-needed improvement. New designs for station approach are likely to be sought by advertising for an architect instead of through a design competition, so we'll involve the Royal Institute of British Architects Competition Office." Meanwhile, on Monday, the Overview and Scrutiny Committee heard that four businesses are still interested in moving into station approach. Councillor Guy Ashton asked how the new process would be different to the first. And Councillor Godfrey said the council would use the design brief in a different way. He said an architect would be appointed before they started the detailed design and would work with the potential tenants. Critics say the flawed design brief was the reason that Hopkins and the other bidder, Winchester-based Design Engine, both came up with schemes that were condemned for being too large. The brief included the need for underground parking and the resulting demand to build high to cover the costs. The scheme has been delayed by the need for traffic assessments to see how city centre traffic will be affected by the development.
And here we have Gottlieb, sacked or suspended? The rebel councillor suspended over allegations of bullying has in fact been sacked, a meeting learned. The Chronicle revealed that Kim Gottlieb had been suspended from a new committee that is seeking to come up with new ideas for the Silver Hill development. It followed complaints from senior officers that he had repeatedly publicly criticised them over the huge city centre scheme that his private legal action scuppered earlier this year. But on Monday, councillors heard his axing was not temporary, but permanent. Howard Bone, head of legal services, said, "Membership of the Central Winchester Regeneration Group is down to Cabinet, and Cabinet made the decision that Councillor Gottlieb would not be on it." Mr. Bone admitted there was nothing in the council constitution for this scenario. Councillor Gottlieb told the Overview and Scrutiny Committee that his sacking was news to him, as he had understood he had only been suspended until the Standards Committee had investigated other allegations against him. He called on the committee to investigate, not just for my sake, but for the benefit of any councillor in the future who might have differences with the leader or chief executive. I can assure this committee that there is not a single shred of substance in any of the allegations made by the former chief executive, Simon Eden. But even if some or all of them were true, there is nothing in any of them that remotely warrants the sanction imposed. Councillor Gottlieb accused his own group leader, Stephen Godfrey, of exceeding his authority and called on him to withdraw the suspension. I accept that I can be outspoken and that I can be challenging, but I believe that I have always been so in the pursuit of the best interest of the council. What I have not done is ever to offend or criticise any officer or member for personal reasons, and I have already assured the leader that I would never do so. After the meeting, Councillor Gottlieb told the Chronicle, I'm still not really sure if I've been sacked or suspended, because the leader and Mr. Bone seem to be saying different things. What Mr. Bone did make clear was that there is no protocol within the council's constitution to suspend a councillor. So where we go from here, I'm not sure.
That concludes the headlines. And now we continue with the death notices, then Christian comment, followed by letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person, Belgarum, your say and Q&A. This will be followed by announcements and what's on. Here are the death notices. Belle, Rosalie Ross, passed away peacefully on the 8th of September 2016, aged 78. Ferguson, Robert Fullerton, peacefully at home on the 10th of September 2016, aged 98. French, Maureen, née Newton, passed away on the 5th of September 2016. And Shirley, Paula, née Hughes, died at her home in Stretfield on 4th of September 2016, aged 58. Now, would you read the Christian comment, please, Shirley?
Right. It's headed, A Message More Vital Than Ever Before. And it's written by the Reverend Graham Boquet, who is Rector of the Upper Itchen Benefice and Area Dean of Oldsford. Recently, I took part in a trial online annual review of my ministry. One of the online sections asked me to rate myself against a number of set criteria. A score 7 is good, 1 is bad. Are you good at this? Are you bad at that? The problem is I constantly want to rate myself low. Exceeding low standards is easy. I've made it a lifetime goal. The idea that online assessment can produce a varied impression of a priest's or anyone else's abilities might seem a developmentally curious proposition. But the idea is sound because, importantly, it is of course true that some kind of analysis has to take place. The examination should produce new ideas, which then have to triumph over old ones. New ideas are really important, remembering that new ideas can only triumph if they first are based on new knowledge, or second, are responding to new outlooks, new perspectives, new horizons. Proclaiming Jesus in the 21st century requires a response to new outlooks and new ideas. It requires a triumph of grace over modern scepticism. A few weeks ago, I met someone at a dinner party who seemed very happy to tell me how good they were at everything. The individual was very confident, the life and soul of the party. He was the sort of person that gives me a nosebleed. He had lots of ideas, he said. He seemed determined to share all of them with me. He described himself as an ideationist, trained in cleverism, trained in the best techniques to generate ideas. Hedonic John, as I like to call him, seemed to be almost entirely bereft of social, emotional buffers. He slapped me on the back and said, "I love you sort of people, Vickers. You're all very funny." He clearly didn't know many Vickers, but went on, "Funny you may be, but you're all relics." Basically, my new best friend wasn't really in a position to understand Christianity because he had never effectively been told about it. He perceived it through a very particular lens, a modern view strongly influenced by aggressive atheism and a supermarket approach to spiritual well-being. He dismissed the Christian message without truly ever having heard it. He did not understand the life-giving salvation proclaimed by the life and death and resurrection of Jesus, because by whatever means, he had, in that very modern way, placed all his trust and faith in himself. He was the captain of his soul. He was the power in the universe. He was immortal. In our modern times, the Christian message is more vital and new than ever before. Many have never heard it. Christians must proclaim, and to do so loudly and without fear. In Matthew 28:19, we are clearly told, "Therefore go and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit." Unequivocal, uncompromising, new every morning, new in every generation, this we must do.
Peter Edgar writes, "Protect D-Day site. Sir, it's absolutely right that there are concerns being expressed regarding the massive development north of Portsdown Hill around the historic officers' mess at Southwark Park in the Chronicle September the 8th. One major worry must be that this development undoubtedly puts at risk public access to the room in which the final planning for D-Day took place. The room is also was where the timing of the decision to invade France was taken by General Eisenhower. This was a defining moment in the Second World War, and the outcome would have come to have a major impact on the history of the world. Apart from its value as a tourist attraction, the D-Day room and the large wall map it contains, set for H hour on D-Day, is of great educational value. When I was teaching at nearby Denmead Middle School, I used to take our Year 7 pupils to see the map on annual June visits. The young students found this a major motivational experience and demonstrated to me the value of this location in educating future generations about the major role that Hampshire has always played in world history. My worry is that we all know that local authorities and local people are promised by developers that they will happily ensure future public access after development. The problem is that there is a great risk that they will always try to find ways of brushing aside any agreement made once the development is complete. Somehow we must protect the rights of people to visit this iconic room and its use as an educational facility for future generations. Councillor Peter Edgar, Executive Member of for Education, Hampshire County Council."
And with a letter about Councillor Gottlieb again from Mike Caldwell and others, headed "Rebel with Cause." "Sir, the headline and accompanying story of your lead article last week, 'Leader Suspends Rebel Councillor,' were deeply depressing. Just as a fresh start was being made, progress has been disrupted. Councillor Gottlieb has successfully investigated and exposed a long history of poor governance in Winchester City Council in relation to city centre development, as confirmed in the recent independent review by Claire Lloyd-Jones. It was appropriate that he should be given the task of driving forward a new vision of town centre regeneration. As the Chronicle has extensively reported, feelings are high and personal animosity has become intense. This is deeply regrettable. However, it seems disproportionate and ironic that Councillor Gottlieb is the only individual among all the councillors and officers involved in this controversy to be sanctioned. Everyone else seems to be getting away scot-free. In his farewell message, retiring Chief Executive Simon Eden has implied that all the discontent among Winchester citizens can be attributed to troublemaking and almost rabble-rousing caused by Councillor Gottlieb. This does a disservice to the integrity and the intelligence of those who live in Winchester and love it. Undoubtedly, the city does face very difficult questions. One of the key steps towards developing sensible answers for the future is by learning the lessons of what has gone wrong in the past. Mm-hmm. To exclude Councillor Gottlieb from this process would be perverse. And that was from Mike Caldwell and 49 other names, many of them from Hyde area of Winchester.
Mm. And this one is headed Dated Thinking, and it's from Kate McIntosh. Sir, those in Winchester who continue to insist that the prosperity and well-being of the town is dependent on ever-increasing levels of parking in the centre are only about half a century out of date in their thinking. It was in 1963 that the study Traffic in Towns by Colin Buchanan and Anne McEwen was published, which comprehensively exploded the dictum that conurbations must adjust on demand to accommodate the internal combustion engine. That report demonstrated that the car is an invention of insatiable appetite, which, if placated, will utterly devour the facilities to which it pretends to offer access. Traffic expands to fill the space available. For example, the perpetual gridlock on the M25. This lesson has gradually sunk in with some authorities, such as York, Bristol, Edinburgh and Oxford, where restraint of the private vehicle is embedded in planning and policy, and other mobility options are encouraged. Since 1963, further imperatives for vehicle restraint have emerged, chief of which are the need to cut emissions, both for climate change and health reasons. Hardly a week passes without a new report on the malign effects of vehicle exhausts, the latest being a Swedish study showing a probable link to Alzheimer's disease and vascular dementia. And that was from Kate McIntosh, MBERIBA, West End Terrace, Winchester.
EU democracy risk. Edward Fennell writes, Sir, like Paul Williams, Chronicle Letters, September the 8th, I voted to remain on June the 23rd. However, I did so with considerable misgivings. While admiring the original motive for the Common Market and the EEC, the character of the organisation has morphed on its way towards becoming a European Union. The demands of the Euro and the ambitions of the European Commission bureaucracy are squeezing out democracy, as demonstrated currently by the Italian banking crisis. And we now have a number of countries, especially the smaller ones, who are being leaned on and bent by the more powerful forces. Added to that, the unwieldiness of a 27-strong entity means that it lacks agility where it really matters. The idealistic qualities attributed to the EU by the passionate Europhiles are now more an illusion than a reality, I suspect. That said, the Brexit process is going to be extremely complex, long drawn out, and will almost certainly involve economic pain. There could also undoubtedly be regrettable losses in some areas, such as academic exchange and scientific research. What kind of settlement we achieve, and whether it's positive or negative, will take at least a decade to assess. Edward Fennell, Egbert Road, Hyde, Winchester.
And this letter from Jay Maguire is headed 5-day NHS is unobtainable now. Sir, I am a 75-year-old man living on my own with a severe fungal condition of the feet that is a source of great discomfort and at times pain. After attending the podiatry team of the Royal Hampshire County Council Hospital in Winchester and been seen and treated for sores related to the foot infection, I was told that, unfortunately, due to cutbacks, it would be 3 to 4 months before a podiatry consultation could be arranged and that self-treatment was all that could be recommended for me. Why do the Tories tell so many untruths about the National Health Service? I am totally with the doctors. If 5-day-a-week hospital service is unobtainable, how can they possibly provide 7? And that is from J. Maguire, Wavelway, Stanmore, Winchester, and is accompanied by a photograph of the 3-storey tall Victorian hospital building, very attractive, with arched windows that look like windows in churches, and brickwork, red brickwork, with cream bricks in lines along it, and then patterns in diamond shapes of a darker brick on it.
Thank you to all our correspondents. If you would like to contact the Chronicle, send letters for publication by email to letters@hampshirechronicle.co.uk or by post to 5 Upper Brook Street, Winchester, SO238AL.
The government claim the proposal will improve social mobility. This is a laudable aim in Winchester, where the gap between the haves and the have-nots in the education and skills deprivation statistics is widening. However, the suggestion that selection improves social mobility is rejected by all credible research and by educational experts on all sides of the political debate. We just have to look at the monumental strides made within Hackney and Islington, both comprehensive systems, in comparison to the much slower progress in selective systems such as Kent. Or perhaps look at the success of the mixed ability classes in Finland, often cited as an example of educational excellence in Europe. When politicians ignore research and experts in pursuit of their own ambitions, it is because they are pursuing ideology and dogma, not the other way round. When politicians pursue plans that affect all of us, but are outside their election manifesto, they are profoundly undemocratic. Perhaps the current lack of credible opposition is making them overconfident in pursuit of their ambitions. Whatever it is, there are increasingly worrying signs of a sort of fundamentalism within our newly assembled government. We only need to look to the state of politics in the USA to see what the consequences of this might be. I would be interested in hearing the views of our MP on this matter. Alistair Marsden, Stanmore Lane, Stanmore, Winchester.
Protect D-Day site, writes Peter Edgar. Sir, it is absolutely right that there are concerns being expressed regarding the massive development north of Portsdown Hill around the historic officers' mess at Southwick Park. Chronicle, September the 8th. One major worry must be that this development undoubtedly puts at risk public access to the room in which the final planning for D-Day took place. The room is also was where the timing of the decision to invade France was taken by General Eisenhower. This was a defining moment in the Second World War, and the outcome would have to have a major impact on the history of the world.
And after that, we travel back in time with historical items, starting 25 years ago, please, Shirley.
Right, 25 years ago, September 13th, 1991. Traffic Havens Plan is headed the first of the 2 articles here. Radical new traffic proposals have been proposed to calm congestion in Winchester's busiest streets and ease stress to residents and pedestrians. The Engineering Services Subcommittee of Winchester City Council approved plans to create calm traffic havens for residential streets within the city's central one-way system. A report introduced by Chief Engineer David Marklew said the proposals comprise a combination of road narrowings, raised areas and chicanes to provide a calming of feet on moving traffic, together with signing which would make it clear to drivers that they are intruding into a quiet area. Some parking will be permitted for residents only. And the second part of this, it's headed Crop Circle Hoaxers. Orsford Crop Circles expert Pat Delgado has hit back at claims made by a national newspaper that the phenomenon is all the work of two Hampshire jokers in their 60s. He has accused the two men of failing to demonstrate their claims and intends to carry on with his 11-year-long investigations, unfazed by the hype and controversy created by the national press. Mr. Delgado said, "Their claims are shallow because they've not offered us a shred of evidence. They join the ranks of the many other hoaxers we have come across."
Back 50 years, please, Heather.
Two items from September the 17th, 1966. First one headed Pentis Saved. Next Monday, September the 19th, the historic Pentis buildings at 41 High Street, Winchester, will again be occupied when the Northampton Town and County Building Society opens the doors of its new office premises by the Buttercross. The fine building, which only a year or two ago was crumbling into structural decay and in danger of collapse, is a prime example of how our historic heritage can be preserved and put to good use. And it is perhaps appropriate that the Northampton, one of the oldest building societies in the country and the first to open a full branch in Winchester, should have undertaken responsibility for the preservation of this ancient structure. And the second item is Farms Under Threat. In the context of the Buchanan feasibility study of South Hampshire, even the best-run farms in the affected area did not present an agricultural case against development, the county planning officer, Mr. Gerald Smart, declared on Friday of last week. Addressing a specially convened meeting of the Winchester Rural District Council, he said, "Although there are farms in the corridor which are well run and in very fine fettle indeed, I do not think there is an agricultural case against the principle of development." The major speech from a rural district council member came from Mr. Charles Watts of Hedge End, who claimed that the majority of the county planning policy centred on urban interests and declared, "The dream of the townsman is likely to become the nightmare of the countryman."
Further back, 100 years, Jane, please.
And two little items from 100 years ago, which was September the 16th, 1916. Firstly, Somme Gaines. "The weekend news from the Western Front is wholly good. The headquarters dispatch on Sunday afternoon summarised our gains during the past week. We have advanced on a front of 6,000 yards to a depth varying from 300 to 3,000 yards, have inflicted severe defeats and heavy losses on the enemy, and have captured Falfemont Farm, Lurs Wood, Guillemont and Ginchy. The capture of Ginchy came on Saturday afternoon to crown a good week's work. It fell as a result of an attack made on a front of 6,000 yards extending from High Wood to Lurs Wood." And secondly, work for the disabled. "Disabled soldiers are being taught to make hand-sewn boots at the Cordwainers Technical College, 42 Bethnal Green Road. Private W. Chalwin, Hampshire Regiment aged 18, knew nothing of boot-making 26 weeks ago. Being unfit for active occupation as a result of wounds, he received tuition at the college. He has made 2 pairs of boots for a West End firm, and 20 weeks hence will be qualified to do the very best work. 12 soldiers are now in the class.
And finally, 200 years ago, back to you, please, Shirley.
Yes, it's in two parts again. And the first one is headed, Lady Pilferer Jailed. The interesting Mrs. Beverley, well known in this city and other watering places for delivering readings and recitations, has lately been displaying her rhetorical talents in a new scene of action, that is, at the Court of Assize for the County of Warwick, pleading her own case against a charge of pilfering a pocket handkerchief in Birmingham. She attracted, as usual, a large and elegant company, and we doubt not that her impressive eloquence affected the sensibility of a great part of her audience. But, unfortunately, there were 12 individuals who were so obdurate and ungallant as not to be persuaded that the handkerchief was picked up by mistake. And poor Mrs. Beverley, alias Elizabeth Richards, was sentenced to incarceration for the term of 12 calendar months. And the second part of this, a smaller report, headed Farming Danger. On Thursday week, a farmer of Llanlivery, Cornwall, undertook to blow up a rock in one of his fields, which obstructed his plough. He charged a hole which he had filled with gunpowder and set fire to the train. But as it did not immediately take effect, he incautiously went forward to discover the cause. Whilst he was examining it, the powder exploded and killed him on the spot.
And now, fast forward to the present, please, Heather, with Chronicle comment.
The editorial is headed A Ludicrous Return to the Dark Ages. We perhaps should be thankful that the grammar school proposal from the government is contained in a green paper for discussion. Let us hope that this utterly stupid idea is killed off at the earliest opportunity. There is a myth that grammar schools magically raise standards. They do not. One only has to compare Hampshire, a comprehensive school county, with Kent, with its many grammar schools. Overall, Hampshire has a better academic record as County Schools Chief Councillor Peter Edgar, a Conservative and the product of Gosport Grammar School, says in the feature in the Learning Curve supplement inside this week's Chronicle. It is preposterous that there seems to be an accepted assumption that somehow comprehensives are schools that clever children need to be rescued from. Try telling that to the children from local schools who since the 1970s have gone on to be high-flying engineers, doctors, scientists, lawyers, journalists or business people. Standards in schools have been rising for years, but the worry is that a group of misguided parents will campaign for one of our excellent schools, Henry Beaufort, the Westgate, King's, Perrins and Swanmore, to be converted. Hopefully, our Member of Parliament will not be swayed.
Thank you. And that now brings us to First Person, which is read by Jane.
And First Person this week is A Summer of Contrasts by Ron Allison. It has been just about a whole summer since I was last able to contribute to this column, and it certainly has been a time of contrasting experiences. Leaving aside the political mayhem before, during and after the referendum, on which I would have thoroughly enjoyed being able to comment, two very different events have dominated my own life. The first, in May, was when I became ill and had to be taken to hospital as an emergency case with what proved to be a case of sepsis. There is no need for medical details here, but from the moment my wife called for assistance to my subsequent discharge from the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, the NHS was superb. The first respondent arrived unbelievably quickly, as did the ambulance she in turn had to call. Initial treatment was given on the way to Romsey Road, and in no time at all I was in a bed in accident and emergency, seen by a consultant, moved to McGill Ward, and then given treatment and care that I can only describe as first class. This was my first experience of being in an NHS hospital as an inpatient, and it left me very impressed. Of course the health service faces serious problems. As the treatment possibilities continue to expand, and we apparently are all destined to live longer, financing the service is bound to be one of any government's great challenges. I do not have the solution myself, but I do know that a standard has been set that must be preserved. The NHS is a national treasure. It deserves and simply must have continued backing as a financial priority. After all that, the next event was even more of a family affair. By way of my grandson, Ross, and his wife, Sally, I became a great-grandfather of twins, Amelia and Henry. It is always amazing when a new life arrives in a family. Suddenly there is a new life to be loved, a new being, another little person, or in this case, two little persons. The miracle of birth. My own children, then their children. Families extend, and there is always enough love to go round. Imagine how terrible it would be if we each had only a limited amount of emotion in our beings, that it had to be sliced up and shared around. No, no, our families can grow and grow, and there will be love enough to meet every demand. 3 weeks after the twins were born, my grandson posted 10 things he had learned thus far. 1. Changing girl nappies is a safer activity than boy nappies for parent and child. 2. Two names really are hard to remember, especially at night. They are now the boy and the girl. 3. Mums are awesome. Like, seriously. Especially Sally, wife, Evelyn, mother-in-law, and Sheila, mother. 4. I actually took a book to hospital to pass the time. Time? Huh! 5. There is a limit to how many nappies you are allowed to buy on Amazon subscription. We have hit the limit. 6. Having twins makes you a celebrity, especially in Marks and Spencer's. But people suck at biology. Yes, the one in pink is a girl and the one in blue is a boy. No, they are not identical twins, clearly. 7. Pulling a dummy from a baby's mouth is like pulling the pin from a grenade. And speaking of explosions, never save time by not burping properly. It is like saving time by not cooking a chicken properly. 8. We upgraded our small wheelie bin to a big wheelie bin. 4 days later, both bins were overflowing. Our upgrade has become a supplement. We are a two-bin family. 9. Sleep is something we dream of when we are awake. 10. Curry, eggs and cabbage have significantly amplified effects on babies when consumed via their mother. Perhaps most of all, says my grandson, we have learned it is entirely possible to be at peak levels of frustration, tiredness and love simultaneously.
And now Shirley has items from Belgarum, an alternative look at the news.
Yes, it's headed Tribute to War Fallen MP. Today is the centenary of the death of Guy Baring, the Winchester MP who was killed on the Somme in the Great War. Lieutenant Colonel Baring was one of 22 MPs who died in the Great War, and at the time of his death had been the MP for 10 years. He had volunteered for service despite being over 40 years of age and had 6 children at home. His death occurred during the Battle of Flers Courchelet. 3 Coldstream Guards, battalions, advanced down the Genchy to Lebeuf Road to attack a German position, and Guy was one of 14 officers killed in action that day. He rests in the Citadel New Military Cemetery near Fricourt in France. His great-great-nephew, Mark Baring, said, "Commemorating the deaths in military service of parliamentarians like Guy Baring is important as a symbol of the terrible sacrifices made by so many families in the First World War. It also reminds our generation of how incredibly lucky we are to have lived in an era of relative global peace." Winchester MP Steve Brine said, "It is important that we mark this day and remember the sacrifices. I often stop when passing the special World War One commemorative plaque inside Westminster Hall, and it was good to visit it with Mark a few years back. He is proud of his great-great-uncle, as are we all in Winchester."
There's no letter from Westminster this week, so we'll go straight on to your say. Moving MPs out of the Palace of Westminster could cost £4 billion. We asked readers if it's a waste of money. Heather has the answers.
Bruce Kinn, aged 70, from Hairstock, said, "It is. It's not a good use of money. They should spend money repairing roads instead of that." Marvin B. Naylor, no age given, musician of Greenhill Road, Full Flood, Winchester, said, "Well, if that's how much it takes, it needs sorting out. They have to go somewhere." Thomas Taylor, aged 26, a retail worker of Turnpike Down, Winnell, said, "It should be less, really. I wouldn't mind Parliament being based elsewhere." And Jackie Bindon, aged 42, of Mews Lane, Winchester, said, "It is a waste of money. I think that money should be spent on things like the NHS and homelessness."
And Jane has an interview with another Wintonian about his view of the city.
And answering questions about Winchester is Bill Ledbetter, 61, retired sales director of Highcliffe Road, Highcliffe, and he shares his favourite things about Winchester. "What's your favourite restaurant or cafe?" "Tom's Deli on St George's Street. Intimate, unpretentious and good quality." "What's your favourite pub or bar?" "The Black Boy on Wharf Hill. Quirky and rare, a community pub. The Hyde Tavern on Hyde Street is a very close second." "What's your favourite shop?" "C&H Fabrics on the High Street. A proper shop, not a multinational chain. Knowledgeable and helpful people." "What's your favourite building?" "The Guildhall, a great resource for the community." "What's your favourite view?" "Looking south across the water meadows from atop the cathedral." "Who or what is Winchester's biggest icon?" "Ah, King Alf's statue." "And what is Winchester's best kept secret?" "The Willow Tree Pub's garden in summer, entre deux mers." "What is the best thing about Winchester?" "A combination of factors, small size and close proximity of all essential resources, and all within walking distance of my home." "And the worst?" "The modern institutional architecture, e.g. the County Council building, the castle, the Wessex Hotel and the Brooks Shopping Centre." "And if there is one thing you can change about Winchester, what would it be?" "I'd like to see the City Council work better, more genuinely engage with the community, get rid of the cabinet system, which is undemocratic, and remove the 3-year election cycle, which is destabilising and actually hands power to the officers." "And describe Winchester in a sentence." "Best place I have ever lived."
And now this week's announcements, starting with a couple of what's on. First of all, the Michaelmas Fair at the Hospital of St Cross in Winchester on Saturday the 24th of September, 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. The entrance is adults £3, children under 12 free. And you can see the Madding crowd perform, and there are craft stalls and more. And if you want to check up on it, you can contact www.hospitalofstcross.co.uk. And another item, which seems rather exciting, famed linguist David Crystal will be the guest speaker at a forthcoming Hyde 900 events next month. King Alfred Weekend on October the 20th to the 23rd marks the annual celebration of the great king who was buried in Winchester. Professor Crystal will speak on the English spoken during King Alfred's time in the 9th century. The lecture will be on Friday, October the 21st in St Bartholomew's Church, starting at 7:30 p.m. And Lighting Up Time ends today, Friday the 16th of September, at 6:42 a.m. and begins at 7:16 p.m. On Wednesday, the 21st of September, it ends at 6:50 a.m. and begins at 7:05 p.m. If you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, please telephone Irene Dowding on 01962 870 370. That's 01962 870 370. Now we continue with further items of general news, starting with Shirley.
Right. This one concerns the Romsey Show, where 24,000 people defied the rain. There was the spirit of the Blitz as thousands braved the pouring rain to turn out for one of Hampshire's biggest country shows. More than 24,000 people pulled on their wellies and waterproofs as they flocked to the Romsey Show at the weekend. The hotly anticipated event on the Broadlands estate is the largest and oldest one-day agricultural horse and countryside show in the region, and was returning for its 174th year. But the rain failed to put people off, with families wrapping up in the face of the elements, eager to meet more than 1,000 livestock, poultry and wild animals, and get stuck into traditional countryside pursuits. The President's Arena was the centre of the action, with a huge range of animals, displays and activities for all ages. This year's theme was forestry, and top favourites included heavy horse breeder David Shearing, who displayed a team of horses to show how they work in the forests, moving logs. Sponsored by Hampshire Collegiate School, he was joined by friends and colleagues and their mobile saw pit, demonstrating the traditional method of sawing trees into planks by hand. This culminated in the traditional grand parade of cattle and sheep, where people could see some of more than 1,000 animals entered into livestock competitions. This was followed by a heavy horse turnout parade and the flagship 100 years of motorised transport pageant. A series of vintage vehicles, including steam engines, motorbikes, tractors, vans and modern SUVs, cruised the area. Show jumping, dog display teams, falconry, ferret racing, fly fishing and taxidermy were among the highlights, while the Adams Axemen Lumberjack display team laid on hard-hitting entertainment. And with this piece, we have many coloured photos showing some of these activities. Show jumping, a lovely white horse leaping with his rider. And there's an axe man just in the act of hitting out with his axe at the log. And there's the band making their way through the rain. And the Rookwood dog display, where we can see some black and white dogs leaping through flaming hoops.
Hundreds learn about the city. The Heritage Weekend is hailed as a success. Hundreds of people have enjoyed Winchester Heritage Open Days, one of the biggest events in the country. around 40 places opened their doors to the public over the weekend in the Winchester district. Some are well known, like the Mayor's official residence, Abbey House, and Searle's House on Southgate Street. Others less so, such as the Winchester Bindery at P&G Wells in College Street and Winchester Lido. There's a picture of this bindery. It's fascinating. There's Tim Wiltshire and his son Pete working at in this room full of manuscripts and sheets of paper and scrolls and lots of dark grey sort of cupboard things that are clearly full of all sorts and some beautifully bound books over on the left. Local coordinator Nikki Gottlieb said, "I'm absolutely delighted at the response I've had. It's really been a huge success. The bad weather on Saturday didn't seem to put people off either, and some events were so popular that they were either fully booked with waiting lists or had queues to get in. It definitely brought people into Winchester, with several attractions saying their visitor numbers were up." Mrs. Gottlieb added, "I want to thank everyone who supported me in putting the festival together, but the real stars of the show are the event organisers. Heritage Open Days just wouldn't happen without them. As for next year, I've already got a long list of ideas for the programme, but they will need to be funded to get them up and running, so any help from sponsors would be greatly welcomed." And one of the many photographs with this is of a group of dancers in Regency costume at St John's House. Looks very Jane Austen.
And here we have 1,000 up for Clarendon Run. The annual Clarendon Marathon will set off from Salisbury across Hampshire on Sunday, October the 2nd. About 1,000 runners will take part, finishing in Winchester. For some, this will be their first race, but for many, they will be repeating this annual pilgrimage which is now fixed in their running calendar. The trail is 90% off-road and takes runners along the ancient Clarendon Way through Wiltshire and Hampshire countryside. In addition to those who are intending to run non-stop for the full 26 miles, there will be some walkers and slow runners who will be taking the opportunity to opt for the earlier start or give extra time. At midday, a second batch of runners will set off from the halfway point at Broughton to join the trail and run a half marathon. There is also a third group who will join at Farley Mount Country Park and run the last 5 miles. Online entries close on Tuesday, September the 20th. On the day, entries are possible with an extra donation of £10 for Rotary charities. And to find out about that, you can go to www.clarendon-marathon.co.uk. And this is accompanied by three photos, one of the iconic tall spire of Salisbury Cathedral, the start of the race, and below it a photo of Winchester's west window, the end of the race, and in between a large photo of a long string of runners panting uphill in their running shorts and vests, obviously very crowded together, but making the most of a fine day last year, clearly, for the marathon.
Headed rights campaigner was bullied in jail. A Winchester Fathers' Rights campaigner claimed he was bullied in jail days before his death. An inquest heard. Hayden Burton died at Royal Hampshire County Hospital days after he was found hanging in his cell at Winchester Prison. However, his mother believes he did not intend to take his own life, and he did it out of desperation so he could be moved away from his wing. Mr. Burton, 42, was being held in remand at the prison, facing an allegation of assault. He was also due to be sentenced at Crown Court for possession of an offensive weapon, criminal damage to a police cell, and breach of a criminal behavioural order by being antisocial. Mr. Burton was a member of New Fathers for Justice, and was campaigning to highlight children's rights, including secret family courts. He had become a well-known figure in Winchester city centre, protesting at the corner of Upper Brook Street and St George's Street in a Superman costume and with a loud hailer. Coroner Graham Short told jurors a summary of the sequence of events before Mr Burton's death in July last year. The court heard how he was taken to Her Majesty's Prison, Winchester, on May the 26th after being charged with two counts of assault, causing actual bodily harm. On June 17th, he appeared at Winchester Crown Court via video, where he asked to change his lawyer and made a count to being stabbed with a biro in prison the previous day. He was also committed to court for other offences and was due to be sentenced in August. The following month, on July 14th, he was put on a care in custody and treatment plan, where he was watched hourly after prison officers believed he was at risk of suicide or self-harm. A prisoner who is trained to listen in confidence to the concerns of fellow inmates also heard how Mr. Burton, formerly of Wolf Close, Stanmore, had spoken of debts and hanging himself. On July 15th, after a fellow inmate left his cell and between checks, he was found hanging. In a statement, Mr. Burton's mother, Maureen Carter, said he had concerns about debts and spoke about bullying to his father in telephone conversations. "We do not believe that he meant to end his life. He lived for his daughter, and he had not given up that he would see her again. He would have been aware of the time when someone was due to check on him again."
Fireman's Row in salute to charity. And there's a picture of a fully kitted out fireman sitting on a rowing machine. Helmet, boots, he's wearing the whole lot. A Winchester firefighter proved his fitness by taking part in a charity row. Wearing full kit and breathing apparatus, which weighs 35 kilograms, watch manager Sean Gray clocked up more than 26 miles on a rowing machine in Winchester High Street. The dad of three from Chandler's Ford said he wanted to give something back to the service after he was hit in a collision last year, which left him with physical and psychological injuries. The fatal crash in August involved troubled young father Darren Father purposely driving his car into a fire engine on the A337 in the New Forest. And the crash had a huge impact on Mr. Gray, but helping him through that tough time was the Firefighters Charity. Mr. Gray, aged 45, who's been with the service for 23 years, split his mammoth effort into morning and afternoon sessions and hopes to raise at least £1,000. Mr. Gray said, "In all the years working for HFRS, this was the first time I used the Firefighters Charity, and I can honestly say it was instrumental in helping with my recovery. Through the help of the charity, I was able to return to some form of normality."
And this sad item is headed, "Nurse Died After Deer Caused Car to Swerve." A nurse who worked in Winchester died after she swerved to avoid a deer that jumped in front of her car as she was driving to work, an inquest heard. Ivory Lapitan was on the A33 near Mitchell-Dever at about 6:30 a.m. on April the 25th when she braked hard to avoid the deer, which was in the middle of the road. The 24-year-old lost control of the car, which swerved before crashing into trees, bringing one of them down onto the vehicle. Motorist Patricia Fagan said that Miss Lapitan from Basingstoke, who worked at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital, was overtaking her on a dual carriageway when she saw the animal in front of both their cars. She told the Winchester Inquest, "As she got level with me, she saw a deer. As I was braking, I heard a massive bang. She spun up the road and hit a tree, which was another massive bang. As I was running towards her, the tree came down on top of the car, which was another bang. I tried to pull the door open and I was banging on the window, shouting hello. She was just slumped on the passenger door. I thought I could hear her slightly breathing, but very shallow, nothing really. Pathologist Dr. Adrian Albadri said that Miss Lapitan, who was originally from the Philippines, would have died instantaneously from the serious head injury she suffered in the crash. PC Steve Wooten of Hampshire Police said there was no physical evidence of an impact with a deer, but added, "There is nothing to suggest it wasn't a deer. We couldn't find a deer in the vicinity, but even if one is hit, they run off." Recording a verdict of accidental death, Assistant Coroner Sarah Whitby said, "Ivory Lapitan was driving on the A33 towards Winchester when she was distracted by a deer running into the road, causing her to brake heavily and collide with a tree. She suffered fatal head injuries and died immediately." Mary Edwards, Chief Executive of Hampshire Hospital NHS Foundation Trust, which runs the Royal Hampshire County Hospital in Winchester, said, "Ivory was a highly regarded nurse whose loss has been felt hugely by everyone who worked with her. Our thoughts are with her family and friends at this very difficult time." And this is accompanied by a beautiful photograph of the young Ivory with a lovely long dark hair and smiling eyes, smiling broadly at the camera.
This one is headed, "Mayor Limbers Up for 90-Mile Cycle." The Mayor of Winchester says she is ready to take on her 90-mile sponsored bike ride, despite breaking her ankle, which scuppered her training. Councillor Jane Ruttle will be undertaking the gruelling challenge to raise funds for her 5 chosen charities, starting on Monday. However, back in March, she was left wheelchair-bound for 6 weeks after breaking her ankle. She says it has fully healed and she has been back on the bike, training hard. Councillor Rutter said she is determined to get as many fellow councillors as she can to join her. "I'm just going to go for it. As tough as it will be, the charities we shall be raising money for are worth it. I am currently trying to persuade as many councillors as I can to join me along the route." With a target set at £7,000, Councillor Rutter is hoping she can raise as much money as possible for charities Combat Stress, Music for All, Home Start, Street Reach and Winchester Youth Counselling. Charters Estate Agents and HAB Housing have pledged £500 each, and the My Donate page is pushing £800. The charities have been selected as part of the Mayor's Charities, a selection of organisation that the Mayor will fundraise for during her year in office. She will be finishing her 90-mile trip on Tuesday by returning to Abbey House. To sponsor the Mayor, visit mydonate.bt.com/events/mayor of Winchester charities/330254.
Genesis to Revelations. From Genesis to Revelation, Winchester Cathedral heard the Bible from beginning to end. The marathon reading started last Wednesday with the help of some famous faces before finishing around noon on Saturday. Brigadier Alastair Bruce, Mayor of Winchester, Councillor Jane Rutter, BBC South Today's Sally Taylor and retired TV anchorman Bruce Parker helped start the event, which saw around 150 people read the book through day and night from cover to cover in this 4-day readathon, a first for the historic cathedral. Beforehand, the acting dean, Canon Rowley Ream, estimated it would take 75 hours to recite the 66 books, 39 Old Testament, 27 New Testament. It came to pass that all 31,102 verses took 74 hours to finish. Also taking part were pupils from Pilgrim School, whilst Christ Church's youth group, Download, covered a night shift. The Reverend Ream said, "It went well, and I thank everybody who took part and the organiser who put the rota together. All money raised will help the cathedral to complete the last leg of its 20.5 million appeal target." That's 20.5 million pounds appeal target, which includes the conservation and the redisplay of the 12th century Winchester Bible.
And now, state-of-the-art hub for rail cycle users. It is the new hub that will provide extra space and increased security for cyclists who commute to and from Winchester Station. At a cost of £400,000, cyclists are set to benefit from improved facilities, including 100 new spaces, CCTV security, and even bike maintenance tools. The hub was opened in style at a small opening ceremony. Cutting the ribbon was Winchester and Chandlersford MP Steve Brine, who was joined by Conrad Haig, Integrated Transport Manager for the Rail Delivery Group, and Christian Neal, the Head of Customer Experience for South West Trains, SWT. Mr. Haig said, "This 100-space facility is part of a bigger programme by the Cycle Rail Working Group to put 75,000 spaces on UK rail network to improve the experience for cycle rail users, and has been made possible by £30 million of government funding. It is a great facility, and SWT are to be commended." The hub is also part of a £3.8 million investment, which will deliver 1,400 extra cycling spaces at 36 stations across the SWT network by the end of the year. It has been developed in partnership between the Department for Transport, Rail Delivery Group, Hampshire County Council and SWT. Mr. Neal said, "We provide well over 10,000 cycle spaces across our network, and this new cycle hub at Winchester grows that number even further. In addition to providing more spaces and shelter from the weather, this new hub offers vastly improved facilities, including real-time passenger information and free-to-use maintenance equipment. We are sure this cycle hub will be very popular, and we look forward to opening more facilities for passengers across the network. Encouraging cycling will be a key strand of transport strategy in Winchester, with the forthcoming Barton Farm development adding the cars of 2,000 households to the local road network." And this is accompanied by a picture of the new cycle hub with the bicycles on racks undercover, and Steve Brine, Conrad Haig and Christian Neal demonstrating a bicycle and the facilities that they have should you need to pump up your tyres or mend something that wasn't quite sitting comfortably on your bike before you cycle home.
Proposal for 365 new homes in countryside. A bid to build more than 350 homes on countryside near Chandlersford has been made by a developer. Land in Valley Park has been earmarked for a development of 365 homes, along with a shop and play areas. The estate is proposed for Thorn Hill, off Flexford Road, between Chandlersford and North Baddesley. The application for outline planning permission for the new estate has been submitted by Gladman Developments Limited to the authority for its consideration. The move has been roundly criticised by local residents and councillors. One resident, who was not named, said, "This area has had a vast amount of housing in recent years and does not need any more. The number of houses is far too many. They will only be fit for sardines." Others raised concerns about the increased traffic onto Flexford Road, which would be the main access point to the development, according to plans. Resident Judith Shepherd said that the road was too narrow and that there were already too many vehicles using the road to accommodate more. Dr. Hugh Shepherd said the proposal is a direct challenge to the recently adopted local plan and would contravene the maintenance of a local gap. The proposed site forms part of the green gap between the two parishes and therefore has not been identified in the Tester Valley Borough Council local plan as suitable for development.
All things Bryson are beautiful. And there's a photograph of a smiling, bearded Bill Bryson. Much-loved travel writer Bill Bryson returns to Winchester to speak in the cathedral next month. He received his British citizenship in Winchester, and now Mr. Bryson is coming back to talk about his life and his work at an event in the Great Church on Wednesday, October the 12th, at 7:30. The Friends of Winchester Cathedral's annual lecture, which has previously had speakers as diverse as Kate Adey, Joanna Lumley and David Starkey, will enjoy a journey through Mr. Bryson's life and travels, peppered with many of his wry observations and anecdotes. From Iowa to Hampshire, Mr. Bryson's life has much to entertain the listener. Journalist at the then Bournemouth Evening Echo and The Times, Chancellor of Durham University, President of the Campaign for Rural England, and author of many books, including Notes from a Small Island and Mother Tongue, the English Language. Through it all, his observations of British life have amused and delighted readers across the world. He writes that the British are often failed to realise the beauty of their countryside and the treasures that our history has bestowed. As a fan of historic churches and a resident of Hampshire, Mr. Bryson is pleased to be appearing at the event, which will raise money for the Friends of Winchester Cathedral, a charity which supports many essential ingredients of cathedral life, from the work of the stonemasons to the girls' choir. Tickets, however, are £20, £15 for Friends of the Cathedral, and available at the Cathedral box office. And the telephone number is 01962 857 275.
And now, info for election demand. Hampshire's crime chief has called for greater information ahead of vital elections. Police and Crime Commissioner Michael Lane has backed an electoral commission report that calls for easily accessible information to be made available to the electorate about the role of Police and Crime Commissioner and about the candidates standing. The Electoral Commission report shows that turnout at the May 2016 PCC elections was higher than the previous elections in 2012. However, across all areas holding PCC elections in England and Wales, fewer than 3 in 10 respondents said they knew either a great deal or a fair amount about them, and 72% said they did not know very much or nothing at all. Mr. Lane said, "The findings come as no surprise. This is an issue I recognised early on, and as such, I made improving the understanding of the role of Police and Crime Commissioner and of policing demand one of my 10 pledges to the people. This is important, not just to help the electorate make a better informed choice when they next go to the ballots, but also to enable greater public involvement in the work I do to achieve my mission."
Fresh vision for Silver Hill. Discussion about a new vision for Silver Hill in Winchester has started. A committee will shape a fresh vision for the area and met for the first time on Tuesday, writes Michael Carr. It had been set to be led by Silver Hill rebel Kim Gottlieb, but he has been sacked after complaints from senior officers. He watched on for around 10 minutes from the public seats before leaving. His sacking followed complaints from senior officers that he had repeatedly publicly criticised them over the scheme that his private legal action scuppered earlier this year. The Central Winchester Regeneration Informal Policy Group has now begun talking about what they want built at Silver Hill and aim to create a supplementary planning document. New chairman, Councillor Victoria Weston, said she wants to look closely at the 2003 planning brief as a starting point. However, Council Corporate Director Steve Tilbury pointed out that the 2003 planning brief was outdated in some respects. Meanwhile, Councillor Rose Burns, an ally of Councillor Gottlieb, voiced concerns about technical issues. She said, "Are we starting with a clean sheet, a clean slate? Where are we with the 2009 scheme? And the planning consents has that you ceased to be, have they passed away? If that's in the background, it is going to impinge on quite a lot of things we discuss." Head of Legal Services Howard Bone said, "Clearly, work was carried out originally, but we have not come to a view whether that was commencement." Steve Tilbury also pointed out planning applications could be lodged while the SPD is being created, but said, "Since the scheme collapsed last year, no developer has come forward."
And I'm afraid that's all we have for you today. Please return the memory sticks in the yellow wallet as soon as you've finished with it. Well, thanks to our this week's editors, Jean and Vernon Gardner and Irene Dowding, and thanks to all the volunteers who prepare and dispatch the newspaper and the magazine to you. And thanks to our readers today, Shirley.
Goodbye.
Heather.
Goodbye.
And Jane.
Goodbye.
And goodbye from me, Noel Thorpe Tracy, and thanks for listening. I hope you have a very pleasant week. Goodbye.